If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
This is Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Coming out of my cage and I've been doing just fine. Gotta be down because I want it all. It started out with a kid.
That's how you get revved up on a Saturday morning. Sports Radio 810 WHB. This is Sports Saturday. I'm your host, Brad Porter. Jed Marshall is here in studio as well, and Rudy Salazar, better known as Not That Rudy, is running the show today. Got a pretty good schedule of guests lined up for you. Run through them, kind of set the table for you, and then we'll get into some discussion. Coming up at 9:30, Kenitra Pulliams from Spectrum Sports will be here. She covers the Kansas Jayhawks quite in depth, and we're going to talk about life after Billy Preston, what to do about Azubuike in late-game situations that are close, and maybe we'll get into a little Lorenzo Cain and a little Bob Sutton as well. She covers the Royals and Chiefs, too, so Kenitra Pulliams coming up at 9:30. At 10 o'clock, my good friend Al Fitzmaurice, former Royals right-handed pitcher, the big red-headed right-hander, is going to join us. We'll get into Lorenzo Cain signing with the Milwaukee Brewers and with Alcides Escobar supposedly re-signing with the Royals. They can't talk about it yet because it's not official. I guess he's got to go through the physical and the paperwork and agreements on, I'm sure there's going to be bonuses in his contract because it's reported to be around $2.5 million, which in today's Major League Baseball is peanuts for a shortstop who's going to play 162 games if he can. And, you know, despite his numbers, he's a guy who plays every day. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about Royals Fan Fest, which is going on. If you saw the pictures people were posting on Twitter last night, it looked like a really fun night. I know Mick Schaefer from 41 Action News was there, along with Mike Marusarz and Gary Lezak, and they were playing all the games they had out there. It looked like an absolute blast. And I saw Danny Duffy post a video last night. He's helping out with dogs, I believe, from Wayside Waifs, who are looking for homes, and so he was holding up a puppy. And if you know Danny Duffy, he's got a dog and loves his dog and tweets pictures of his dog all the time. So Fan Fest going on today in downtown Kansas City. We'll talk with Al Fitzmaurice about that at 10 o'clock. At 10:30, Matt Wheeler, who I used to be a co-worker with at the channel formerly known as Metro Sports, he now works for a national media outlet. And I've got to ask him if I can say who he works for. Let's just say it's the biggest television cable sports outlet in the country. And he works behind the scenes putting together stuff for the NBA draft and all of the great NBA coverage that ESPN does now. So we're going to ask him about the KU players who are getting ready for the NBA draft. We'll ask about Michael Porter Jr., where he might go in the draft if he'll ever play at Missouri. We'll get into that. Also, Matt Wheeler, if you don't know him, is he knows a ridiculous amount about European basketball. So I'm going to ask him about this team in Bosnia that Billy Preston went to and whether or not that's a stable place to go to hone your skills for the NBA. And what about the team in Lithuania where the Ball Brothers are? Matt Wheeler knows all of this stuff. So that's coming up at 10:30. Also, a great NBA game tonight right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, Celtics and Golden State Warriors. At 7 o'clock, we'll have that for you live. At 11 o'clock, Nick Jacobs from 41 Action News will join us. The Super Bowl is now a week and a day away, and Nick Jacobs goes in and breaks down all the videos that are posted through the NFL's media website. If you can get in, it crashes quite a bit. And we'll also talk about the Chiefs' moves and non-moves, including retaining defensive coordinator Bob Sutton. And I'm sure Nick Jacobs will have some strong opinions about that. So Nick Jacobs at 11 o'clock, Nick Jacobs from 41 Action News. And then at 11:30, Jarrett Sutton, former Missouri Tigers basketball star, who now scouts for the NBA and does television work for the SEC Network. He's going to join us. We'll talk about Mizzou. Mizzou is not participating in the Big 12 SEC Challenge today. Mizzou is playing Mississippi State because obviously there's more teams in the SEC than the Big 12. So Missouri left out of the challenge. So we'll get into that at 11:30. It's a full day of sports here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Coming up, we're going to take this show up until noon, and then Jayhawk Game Day starts with Joshua Briscoe, and Joshua always does a great job on Jayhawk Game Day, very entertaining to listen to. So that'll start at noon. At 2 o'clock, it's the KU Network pregame show, And then at 3:30, Texas A&M at Kansas. That'll be live right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. And as I said, that'll lead into tonight's NBA coverage, 7 o'clock, Boston Celtics, Golden State Warriors right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. All right, so Jed Marshall is here in the studio with me, producer here at Sports Radio 810 WHB. He's been on air quite a bit as well. Two things to get into as we get the ball rolling here, and I'm trying to decide where to start because you always want to go local when you have a Kansas City show. So the losing Lorenzo Cain, possibly resigning Alcides Escobar, pretty high on my list of things to talk about. But I think I got to start with the Michigan State story. And I thought about this a lot this morning. I was up early. I watched Caroline Wozniacki win the Australian Open, which was fantastic. Her duel was terrific. Television, appealing television, stimulating television. I mean, it was just a fantastic back-and-forth battle. But then the coverage when SportsCenter started this morning was into all the outside-the-lines reports on what's happened at Michigan State University, not only for the last couple of weeks, but over the last 10 to 20 years, and where this story is going. And here's the thing about Michigan State. They now have ESPN Outside the Lines covering the story. The Detroit Free Press has been all over this story with their outstanding coverage. The Indy Star has been fantastic with their coverage of the story. The state of Michigan's attorney general is now in on this story. So everything that's been hidden, everything that's possibly been covered up for the last 7 to 10 to 20 years, it's coming out. It's already cost the jobs of the school president, Lou Anna Simon, whose actions and statements over the last week to week and a half have been deplorable. When she came out of the courtroom last week and the week before, when Allie Raceman and all the gymnasts were testifying against Larry Nassar, she was asked about her knowledge of the situation. She said, look, I played it straight up. I had a report come to my desk that said someone, a physician, unnamed, may be doing something to these girls. But there wasn't a name there. There wasn't anything I could do. Really? The president of one of the most prestigious public universities in America was powerless to do anything. Folks, this is what's commonly referred to as plausible deniability. School presidents and athletic directors do this. They use this term, plausible deniability. Politicians use the term plausible deniability. Corporate CEOs and executives use the term plausible deniability. Well, I saw a report, but it didn't have a name in it. I didn't take it any further. Really? You have all the power on campus to do everything you can to find out exactly who this was and what was going on. But Lou Anna Simon said, I didn't know. It just said, some physician, some doctor. Nothing I can do about it. Then she defiantly said, no, I'm not resigning. The Board of Trustees took a vote at Michigan State and said, we support her. One member of the Board of Trustees came out and said, no, I do not. She needs to go. The other board members came back and said, he's outside of his bounds. We all voted and agreed to support her. We don't agree with him. What happened? She resigned, and the Board of Trustees agreed with her. Lou Anna Simon out as president of Michigan State. Mark Hollis, the athletics director, out. He has resigned. He's saying he didn't know about all of this stuff, but it was better for the university to move on. He's out. Tom Izzo, the men's basketball coach, Mike D'Antonio, the football coach, both came out with statements saying, well, we've done our best to clean up. We didn't know about stuff going on within our own teams. Again, plausible deniability. I don't think Tom Izzo, Mike D'Antonio make it beyond the school year. Maybe one does. Maybe they both do. Maybe there's a spineless group still left at Michigan State, but I think this may cost them their jobs. Just the repeated statements coming from the leadership at Michigan State are appalling. Over and over and over, we didn't know. I wasn't involved. I may have heard something, but I didn't do anything about it. Now, guess what? You've got ESPN on the story. They'll find out. You've got the Detroit Free Press on the story. They'll find out. They already have. The Indy Star, which is a great newspaper, they found things out, and they're going to find out more. And the Attorney General of the state of Michigan is on this, and they're going to find out. They're going to find out exactly who these weasels are, and they're going to root them out. They're going to expose them. Now, one more thing, and I'm going to bring Jed Marshall in here. One more thing that made me sick this morning reading this. CNN went through the contract for Lou Anna Simon, the ousted president of Michigan State University. This is what her contract entitles her to after she leaves. She can elect to return to a faculty position and take a 12-month research leave, during which she would be paid her current salary of $750,000. That's according to the contract, which was provided to CNN by Michigan State spokesman Jason Cody. What else does she get? Well, if she chooses to return to the faculty side, she would be paid her current salary of $750,000 for the first year and then 75% of her salary for the second and subsequent years. Also, the usuals, an office and a telephone and those sorts of things. So Lou Anna Simon, who buried her head in the sand and let this Larry Nassar disaster go on for at least 7 years that she knew about, 5 years, whatever, pick a year. The information is fast and flowing. Still going to get $750,000. Another member of the Board of Trustees, the president resigned, said, look, we got a lot of great things going on at Michigan State, more than just this Nassar thing. This Nassar thing, that's what a member of the Board of Trustees called it. And I'm going to bring in Jed Marshall here because it's not a Kansas City story per se, but it's a story that's going to hit every campus in America.
Absolutely. And this morning when I came in, I mentioned that this is what we had to talk about, at least to start the show. And I also said it was going to be uncomfortable because nobody likes talking about this. I thought you made some great points there, talking about the president who left. Whether she was complicit or in the know for whether it be 1 day, 5 years, 7 years, it's regardless of which, it's all too long, and it's appalling. The other thing that you mentioned is the old line that Soren says from Casino, either you're too stupid to know about it or you're in on it. Either way, you got to go.
You got to go.
It's that simple, and I feel like it's being broken down that way at Michigan State. And you see, you mentioned, you know, maybe D'Antoni, or excuse me, D'Antonio and Tom Izzo will be able to stay. You look at the success that a guy like Rick Pitino had at Louisville, he still went. It's not the same issue, similar, but not the same. But I don't think either of those guys make it. I'd be surprised if Tom Izzo coaches past the end of the season.
And look, don't feel bad for those guys. They've made their millions. They're sitting on stacks of cash. I'll throw this out to you, Jed Marshall. I use the term plausible deniability, which Lou Anna Simon, the now ousted or the resigned president of Michigan State University, had this piece of paper that said, well, there's a physician on campus that may be doing something to these kids, these girls, these young women. She said there wasn't a name on there, and she left it at that. So plausible deniability part is part of this. But two other terms I'll throw out, willful ignorance and willful arrogance. You can't touch us. We'll cover it up. We're too big. We're too big to be touched by this.
Well, last night we were talking about this over at a friend's house, and people talked about just the amount of money, and somebody mentioned the old Mangino quote about, you know what it's about, dollar signs.
Dollar signs.
The fact that there is so much money at stake for each of these athletic programs, all of these athletic programs at the Division I Power 5 level, when something like this does happen, yes, they ultimately think, well, what do we do? This will hurt our bottom line. We can't have a $1 billion enterprise be losing this type of money if this comes to light. So ultimately, as you mentioned, yes, a cover-up of some sort, ignorance, you know, is bliss, becomes kind of par for the course.
You have to be careful with the things you say, and I'm going to be careful how I say this. It's borderline criminal.
Absolutely.
If not criminal.
Absolutely. I mean, there are hundreds, when you bring in the Larry Nassar, hundreds of people's lives have been affected literally right by the actions that people have taken in this situation. It's not cut and dry where, you know, one person was affected. Literally hundreds of people.
Here's another thought I had watching ESPN's coverage this morning of Michigan State. They showed the students marching on campus last night in protest for the way Michigan State has handled this. And I thought, how things have changed from when the Joe Paterno, Larry Sandusky situation happened at Penn State. What did the students do at Penn State? They rioted because their football coach got fired. They rioted. They burned cars. They tore down signs. They started fires because their football coach got fired. That was embarrassing. That's a black mark on those students at Penn State who did that. Not all of them went along with it, but enough that it made national television, and they embarrassed themselves. Michigan State, times have changed with, you know, pick the starting point. Harvey Weinstein, Woody Allen, pick your starting point. The days of protecting those people and the people who protect those people, that's over. That's done. I'm sure some will still try to get away with it, but it's done. This day and age of this overwhelming arrogance and I'm too powerful and I'm too rich, that's over. And good for the students and good for those young women and girls who came forward to speak. And you know what? Another part of this that bothered me, there's so many oily, dirty sides to this story. But the judge in the case against Larry Nassar at the end of the trial held up a letter that Larry Nassar wrote in his defense saying, well, some of these girls are making up stories and you can't believe everything. And she looked right at him and said, this is supposed to be an apology, and threw it.
That was great.
She threw the apology letter, and she dressed him down for the – I watched it. She dressed him down for a good – it was close to a half hour before sentencing him. And I saw outrage on Twitter saying this judge went too far. This judge was using this to lecture a defendant, and it was an improper thing to do. It was something a judge should not do. Well, let me tell you something. I've been in courts for trials before when athletes have been involved. I've had to cover trials. Judges in the United States routinely lecture defendants, especially a defendant as disgusting as Larry Nassar. This happens every day in America. Judges lecture defendants before announcing the decision and before announcing sentencing. It happens every day. If this was a man, would people be outraged by this? I don't think so. But to come down on the judge for lecturing Larry Nassar? Sorry.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. To any type of punishment that if you want to call him a man, whatever, was given was not harsh enough in my mind. I have two sisters, so.
Yeah, I've heard debates before among friends about child predators, and life in prison doesn't seem good enough. And then inevitably, someone will bring up whether or not child sex abusers should get the death penalty. Now, I'm not going to wade into the death penalty waters here. I'm just telling you it's something people talk about. That's a whole nother issue. The bottom line is, Allie Raisman, former Olympic gymnast, all those young women, all those girls, all the reporters that are on this now, and the Attorney General for the state of Michigan, they're all coming. And they're going to get these people. And if you're one of those people that's going to be a target, you might want to send your money to Switzerland or a Cayman Islands bank account, because they're coming. They're coming for everybody. They're coming for answers. And we already saw it in the Outside the Lines piece, which I would encourage you. I don't know if it's posted online yet on ESPN.com, but I would encourage you to go watch it. I'm sure it'll be replayed dozens of times throughout the day today on ESPN or ESPN2. But one of the former counselors at Michigan State, who was her job was to counsel students who were involved in sexual violence and violence of other sorts. She doesn't work there anymore, and she's come forward to say, "Yeah, the university and the athletics department wanted to internalize all of the investigations and handle everything themselves." And she was asked, "Did they know?" And her response was, "How could they not know?" So this is coming, and it's coming to other schools as well.
You mentioned ESPN. All of the stuff is up. It's on the front page headline, so you should be able to find it there as well.
And I'll throw in one more angle, and I had somebody kind of wanted to debate me on Twitter last night about it, and I try to avoid Twitter debates whenever I can because it's usually not productive. But he actually made a good point. I was talking about the NCAA and their role in this, and this person tweeted at me, "Well, this wasn't the original mission of the NCAA. It was to handle other things." And I kind of thought, okay, maybe that's true, but Title IX is now a big thing, and this all could fold into Title IX. And the story came out yesterday that Mark Emmert, the president of the NCAA, received a letter of allegations against Michigan State in 2010. Whether or not that was the NCAA's job to handle then, he didn't tell anybody about it for the last 7 years. And I saw him, he was at an event last week where he was talking about something NCAA related, and somebody asked him about, and he went on and on about these different issues. And then he was asked, "What about the allegations at Michigan State?" And he said, "I don't have enough information." Really? After hundreds of statements from victims in a courtroom, you don't have enough information? You don't know enough to comment? Okay. So we got into that, and maybe it's not a pleasant way to start a Saturday, but that's where we were. We're going to take a time out here, and then we're going to bring the discussion back up. And I don't mean back up as in what we discussed we shouldn't have, but we're going to bring it back up to more positive things. So coming up after the break, Kenitra Pulliams from Spectrum Sports will join us. We're going to talk Kansas basketball, Big 12 SEC Challenge, hosting Texas A&M this afternoon at 10 o'clock. Former Royals pitcher Al Fitzmaurice talking Lorenzo Cain, Alcides Escobar. 10:30, Matt Wheeler talking NBA and draft prospects for KU players and Missouri players. 11 o'clock, Nick Jacobs, 41 Action News, talking Chiefs, Super Bowl in the NFL. And at 11:30, Jared Sutton talking Missouri and all things college basketball. We'll take a quick timeout. More Sports Saturday right after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
There we go. Get the blood pumping a little bit on a beautiful Saturday morning in Kansas City and across the Midwest. This is Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. I am your host, Brad Porter. Rudy Salazar is running the show today. Got a lot of great guests lined up coming up at 10 o'clock. Former Royals pitcher Al Fitzmaurice talking Lorenzo Cain, Alcides Escobar on the Royals, and Royals Fan Fest going on downtown. And Fitzy will be part of that. 10:30, Matt Wheeler will join us and talk some NBA basketball. And he does a lot of work with the draft coverage for a major television outlet. And we'll find out where Devontae and Svi might go in the draft, as well as Michael Porter Jr. So that's at 10:30. And at 11 o'clock, Nick Jacobs, 41 Action News, will join us talking Chiefs, Super Bowl, and the National Football League. And 11:30, Jared Sutton will talk a little Missouri, Mississippi State, and college basketball in general. We're going to take our show up till noon, and then at 12 o'clock, Jayhawk Game Day with Joshua Briscoe, as you look ahead to KU and Texas A&M. At 2 o'clock, the Kansas Network pregame show. At 3:30, Texas A&M at KU, live right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. And then a little NBA to take you through the night tonight here, which is awesome. Boston Celtics and Golden State Warriors. We're going to lead off today with my good friend from Spectrum Sports, Kenitra Pulliams. Kenitra, we got a beautiful day outside. Should be awesome to get out and about and then take some time to enjoy some college basketball. Hello, Kenitra. Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
There, we got you now.
I'm going to call it, it's like sprinter weather, like spring, like right now, but winter's not over yet. But, hey, I'm enjoying, if it's 40 degrees, you know, before 10 o'clock already, I'm in sun shining, we're in good shape.
I like that word, sprinter. I'm going to use that the rest of the day. Enjoy your sprinter day.
There you go.
Before you, and Kaneder works for Spectrum Sports, and they do a great job covering the Kansas Jayhawks. And before we get too far into this, kind of in general terms, this Big 12 SEC challenge, which has not really been a challenge for KU. They've beaten Kentucky a couple of times. They've split with Florida before that. Now Texas A&M. Are you motivated? Because you're from Texas, the state of Texas, and so you're right in the middle of Big 12 SEC country. Is this a compelling series, a compelling challenge, the Big 12 versus the SEC?
Not really. I mean, number one, the timing of it. It's like, hey, let's take a break for one day in the middle of Big 12 conference action and play against SEC opponents just for TV's sake. Instead of doing it back in November when the ACC Big Ten challenge, why not do it then? But, you know, now it's bad timing. I mean, I guess you could say, hey, you can take a break and refuel. But then at the same time, it's unbalanced because there are more SEC teams than Big 12 teams. So not everybody, Missouri included, not playing against an old Big 12 rival. But, you know, maybe it means something to viewers because, hey, at least this instance, it's an old Big 12 rival in Texas A&M. My brother played basketball for Texas A&M, you know, back in the 90s. But, no, I don't think anyone, including Bill Self, is in favor of this game today.
Yeah, another part of this, again, before we get too far into it, I find it interesting. I don't think the SEC and the Big 12 are ever going to put Missouri and Kansas against each other. I think that would would be riot condition 5 in Lawrence, Kansas, if that were to happen. But Kansas and Bill Self in the past have agreed to play Nebraska in the regular season, who left the Big 12. They played Colorado, who left the Big 12. Now, Bill Self likes those coaches.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those are good games. I have no problem with that. They're not playing Missouri. And they're going to play Texas A&M today, another team that left the Big 12. I just find that to be an interesting angle, that they've played these other teams, but still not Missouri unless it's an exhibition.
Right, unless it's a charity exhibition game for hurricane relief. Maybe if Missouri can get things going in the right direction, you know, maybe we'll see it in the NCAA tournament. But, you know, it'll never be part of the SEC, you know, Big 12 challenge, which has been heavily favored in the direction of the Big 12, where they undefeated in 4 years worth, 3 times. Big 12 has won it, and last year the two conferences tied at 5-5. So, you know, it's a conference breeder. You know,
yeah, it comes right on the doorstep of the Sunflower Showdown Monday night in Manhattan between KU and K-State, and I think everybody's looking forward to that, definitely. We're talking with Kaneder Pulliams from Spectrum Sports, KU and Texas A&M this afternoon at 3:30, live here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. All right, let's get to the big story of the week. Actually, two big stories of the week, Kaneder. And I'll go in reverse order. The story came out that some gentleman, who is probably a Kansas basketball fan, showed up at the dormitory where the players stay. I say dormitory. It's a glorified condo complex because it's so awesome. But this gentleman showed up multiple times throughout the day trying to get the attention of the players and offer free throw advice to Ezebuke, which, look, a lot of people are offering advice. I found that a little strange, and it's probably harmless, but it's a little on the deep end, a little on the far end of the spectrum there.
Right. I mean, like, who is this man, and what did he think he could offer that, you know, that Doak or any of the KU players were going to listen to? What gives him the right to think that he has all the answers to solve, you know, one game, a season's worth of free throw woes for Doak? Bill Self laughed it off, saying that, you know, unless it's, you know, Rick Barry or Mark Price, then, like, you know, whatever, and saying, hey, you know, said gentleman was probably coming to look for him next. but it's news of the weird. But it's not. Yes, Doak's free throw percentage is concerning, but it's not like, hey, you can totally revamp his mechanics at this point in the season. You know, it's not that he's not he's not intentionally trying to miss. It's just there's, you know, his hands are huge, so the ball comes off of his fingers, you know, at a weird angle. But, you know, the coaches will continue to work with him. His teammates will continue to encourage him. And hopefully those numbers improve, especially if he's on the line in game point situations.
And that's where we go back to the Oklahoma game. By the way, this is Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. I'm Brad Porter. Our guest is Kenitra Poliams from Spectrum Sports. So it goes back to the Oklahoma game. And there's been various forms of thought and suggestions about how Bill Self could have handled that better. He came out after the game, took all the blame, said, yeah, I screwed that one up. And look, we all know Mitch Lightfoot is not Azubuike. He's just not. But he's played better the last couple of weeks. He's gotten some blocks, gotten some shots, gotten some valuable minutes. Could, in a late-game close situation, could KU survive by putting Lightfoot and multiple substitutions, substitute Lightfoot in for offense, substitute Azubuike in for defense? Even though Azubuike is shooting, almost 80% from the floor?
Sure.
A ridiculous number.
Sure.
Is that something you think Bill Self might consider? Or because teams are going to do this. It's poke-a-doke from here on out, especially when you get to the Big 12 tournament and the NCAA tournament.
I mean, it's hard to say just because, you know, you'd have to have a stoppage in play. You'd have to, you know, either use a timeout to make the substitution happen or you'd have to have a made free throw happen because, like, if the free throw is missed, it's a live ball. So it's kind of hard to be like, okay, let, you know, sub offense for defense and do it just right. Because, you know, because then at the same time, at what's the detriment to Doak's psyche to be like, we don't trust you if the game, if the balance of the game is hanging there and it's undetermined and we can't afford to have you in the game because you're going to lose the game for us because you're going to miss a free throw. So, I mean, it's hard. I mean, he's a fragile guy. He's a sophomore. You know, you just hope that somehow he can, you know, make one of two, you know, get the free throw percentage up to 50%. And, it's, you know, it's hard to say what's going to happen the next time, but you know, you see what Long Kruger did, and other coaches are definitely going to take notice of that and see if it works for them if going forward in conference games.
In terms of confidence, Bill Self did say this week that he's talked with Udoka and he sees him every day in practice. Or I guess they did have a couple of days off after the Oklahoma game, but talked to him, said he was fine, his spirits were high. And Bill Self did make a point of saying, you know, he didn't lose this game by himself, and all you have to do is look at how Devontae Graham shot in that game, which was awful. Mm-hmm. That's unexpected, but when you're chasing Trae Young around for 40 minutes, you're probably not going to be quite as sharp. So it wasn't just it wasn't just Udoka, but that's the glaring part of it because it was a late game situation, and Bill Self chose not to sub him out.
And that's another thing, you know, you mentioned Devontae and the fact that he's, you know, he's played 40 minutes multiple times this season. How fresh is Devontae? And the fact that Bill Self doesn't trust anyone as much as Devontae to ignite the offense. And then, yes, you have Devontae on Trae Young. That's going to tire you out. So what Bill Self is doing is, you know, giving Devontae, giving Malik, giving Spee some days off during practice to preserve their energy so that you can have them the second half of the conference season. So you just wonder, like, you need the ball in Devontae's hands, but at the same time, you kind of need him to take a break because the plan was to sub Devontae out every time that Trae Young came out of the game. Well, guess what? Trae Young didn't come out of the game, hence Devontae didn't come out of the game, which was something that, you know, Bill Self wasn't planning on.
You're listening to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. I am Brad Porter. We're talking with Kenitra Pulliams from Spectrum Sports. Kansas hosting Texas A&M today at 3:30. You can hear that game live right here. You talk about getting rest, and Texas A&M had all the hype in the world at the beginning of the season. Not only was it thought that they could challenge for an SEC championship, but maybe had thoughts of making it to a Final Four. Then things fell apart. You know, they had that massive losing streak, Alabama, Florida, LSU, Kentucky, Tennessee, and really not playing well. Then got a couple of wins, including one against Missouri, but then slipped back against LSU Tuesday. This is a game I would think that Bill Self and the coaches would like to get out to a quick start and get Devontae and Svi some minutes on the bench, as you mentioned, getting them some rest, especially ahead of Big Monday in Manhattan against K-State.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you know, because, okay, they'll practice, you know, 30 minutes tomorrow. But at the same time, you saw what happened last week. They got up big against Baylor, and then Baylor comes back. So you need a quick start, you need a strong finish, and you need rest. So it's like, you know, how do you make those variables happen in the course of the game? Oh, and by the way, in, you know, less than 48 hours, you have another game, a conference game, you know, in the Octagon of Doom. So, you know, that's the conundrum, especially, you know, when you have a short bench. And one of the questions asked to Bill Self was like, hey, you know, what about Sam Cunliff? Why hasn't he seen quality minutes?
And I started wondering that, too.
He was supposed to be this great reserve player. And, you know, Bill Self says that he is a big fan of Sam Cunliff. He likes his ability, his talent, what he can bring, you know, but right now it's just not clicking to where, you know, Sam can come in and do the things that the Jayhawks need him to do in a relief role.
And it's also
maybe
part
that
of that
change going forward.
Yeah, it's also part of that trust factor that Bill Self has to have, because they played so many tight games, and Bill Self does not really want inexperienced players in there. I mean, we've seen Silvio De Souza, totally different situation. I mean, he just got here 4 weeks ago.
Sure.
He played a minute and threw one out of bounds and committed a foul, and he was out. So he's not going to put those guys in that situation where they're really going to hurt the team, because he doesn't trust him yet. They haven't earned it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is that, you know, even though Cunliffe has been in the program, you know, for a year now, it's still, you know, a learning situation. And same thing with the Sosa. It's, you know, if you remember that, you know, the team goes overseas this summer. They have boot camp. They have non-conference schedule. They have the exhibition schedule. Whereas DeSosa, he's thrown in right in the middle, or right at the beginning of the Big 12, actually. So he's learning on the fly. His skill set is different from Sam Cunliffe. You know, yes, he is a big body, but Big 12 basketball is a lot different from playing at IMG.
It's very different. Very, very different. This is Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. I'm Brad Porter. We're talking with Kenitra Pulliams from Spectrum Sports. All right, the Texas A&M, we both admit that it doesn't hold a lot of intrigue, the whole Big 12 SEC challenge. So let's go right to Big Monday and K-State, the game in Manhattan. After K-State lost in Lawrence on the 13th, you know, we all know Bruce Weber had his comments afterwards, and ask Fran Fischel about it, he'll tell you. Which, look, I thought it was a moment of comic relief. I don't think it was all that terrible. It was a bad look, but look, he's not Bill Self. He's not smooth with the media. He's not going to wink at you and shake your hand and remember everybody's names like Bill Self does. Bruce Weber is who he is, and he's not going to change. So, okay, so he made those comments, and I don't know if those comments sparked his team, but something sparked the K-State Wildcats. They go out, and they rout Oklahoma, absolutely rout Oklahoma. They beat a good TCU team who was missing their top player. And then they go out and beat Baylor pretty on the road. So something, whether it was Bruce Weber's comments, whether it was these guys looked at how close they played Kansas, realized how good they can be, and said, let's go do it. Let's go win some more games, and let's put ourselves in position for Big Monday to have a chance at a share of first place in the Big 12.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You know, K-State's non-conference schedule, you know, wasn't that great. And so, you know, they're playing not only for first place, but, you know, trying to improve their resume to make it NCAA tournament inclusion worthy. You know, but definitely with the way they play. And then you got to remember, K-State doesn't have Kamal Stokes. You know, he's getting closer to getting back. He's out of the boot. And so, you know, once he comes back, the boost, the lift that he's going to give the Wildcats, you know, will be something to see. But at the same time, it's not like they're really hurting without him. Was it 2 weeks ago, K-State and KU were the only teams to win both of their conference games. So it's so Big Monday is going to loom large.
Do we expect
in Manhattan?
I expect Barry Brown versus Devontae Graham, and perhaps Barry Brown is the player for the Wildcats who stepped in and said, "This is my team. I'm taking it." And you look at his numbers against Baylor during the week: 9 of 16 from the floor, made all 12 of his free throws, made 50% of his three pointers. Grabbed a handful of rebounds, dished a handful of assists, and perhaps Barry Brown is the kid. And look, everybody knew who follows K-State knows he's super talented. But perhaps he's the guy who said, okay, it's my team. If we're going to win, I'm going to step it up, and everybody's going to follow me.
Except for the way that the game in Lawrence ended.
Yes.
You know, that.
But he's come back from that.
That was not that wasn't the play that was drawn up, and, you know, he admitted he just, you know, he had a brain fart, and it just kind of like panic. It was supposed to go, you know, through Dean Wade's hands, and it didn't happen. So, but, you know, maybe it's just, hey, it's a learning experience. Chalk it up, and you know, we'll see what happens on Monday.
I like the Dean Wade story. I don't have much time left to get into it, but a kid from small town Kansas playing the big time at K-State. And every time they say Dean Wade, sometimes I hear D Wade. I'm like, wait a minute, Dwayne Wade's at K-State now? But it's a fun story. Hey, Kenitra, let me ask you one final question here. It had nothing to do with basketball, but you and I both covered all the Royals playoff runs over the last few years, and Lorenzo Cain is the first big piece of the puzzle to step away. I'm happy for him. He deserves the long contract, deserves the money. I'm so happy for him. But, man, what are you going to miss most about Lorenzo Cain? I love the guy to death. He's one of my favorites.
I mean, apart from what he does in center field, you miss, I will miss, the playfulness in the clubhouse between Lo Kane and Salvi.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Salvi has a way of getting under Lorenzo Cain's skin, but making him laugh at the same time, which is
it made the clubhouse enjoyable just to see, you know, that brotherly bond and that camaraderie, and it's just, you know, it's funny, and you know, you just wonder what kind of effect will it have on Salvi.
Yeah. I know he's sad. He said the right things at FanFest, but I know he'll be a little bit sad. But thankfully, Kansas City Royals fans have said they're happy for Lorenzo, and it's not like the old days where you booed the players when they left town. So definitely a different feeling about this team. Kenitra, thank you very much. Enjoy this Sprinter Day. Beautiful Saturday afternoon, and enjoy some college basketball. KU and Texas A&M at 3:30, all right?
Appreciate it, Brad.
All right, thank you very much. That is Kenitra Pulliams from Spectrum Sports. Does a great job covering the Kansas Jayhawks as well as the Royals and Chiefs and everything else around town. We will take a timeout. Coming up at 10 o'clock, Al Fitzmaurice, former Royals pitcher, is going to join us. We'll talk about Lorenzo Cain, Alcides Escobar, and what about the Royals rotation? They've still got some work to do. Spring training is 3 weeks away. Dayton Moore's got work to do. He knows it. I know it. We all know it. I'm Brad Porter. You're listening to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Back on Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. I'm your host, Brad Porter. Rudy Salazar is running the board. It is a beautiful day in Kansas City and across the Midwest, and Kenitra Pulliams said she's calling this Sprinter, a cross between spring and winter today. Jed Marshall has joined me back in studio, and we'll talk Royals for a couple of minutes before we have to break, as Al Fitzmaurice, former Royals pitcher, is going to join us at 10. So I'll lead into a couple of minutes here on Royals. Conrad McGorkin, who I think everybody here at 810 follows on Twitter, and a lot of Kansas City sports fans do. He does the the gifts and the videos that are very funny. Well, Cody Tapp made a bet with Seren last year that if Alcides Escobar re-signed with the Royals, Cody would have to eat a hat. And Seren reminded him of that bet this week. And so Cody's been posting pictures of different hats and, you know, what should I eat? So Conrad McGorkin has a video gif of Cody's head and his mouth opening up and a Royals hat going in.
Yeah, last night on that was pretty good. Last night on Sports Night, Beards and Cody were running down some different ideas on certain hats he could eat. It was pretty entertaining.
How about one of those hats the ladies wear to the Kentucky Derby? The big feathery.
Yeah, that'd be kind of hard. The one that I think sounded the easiest was a stocking cap. And that you
might be able to chew through that.
Well, there was a way you could boil it down so it gets to be about the size of a tennis ball, okay. And then you could cut it up and put it like over a salad or something.
Or you could unspool it
and do spaghetti and meatballs. There was one that had that.
All right, Royals talk here is Alfitz Morris is coming up. Got a couple of minutes left. Jed Alcides Escobar, his signing is not official yet. He's got to go through a physical, and then supposedly it's for $2.5 million. The reaction on Twitter and the phone calls yesterday here at 810 were very negative. For $2.5 million for a guy who's going to play 162 games for a team that's not going to win, and a guy you can, if it doesn't work out, you can sit him on the bench and it doesn't cost you that much. But what do you think about the signing of the forthcoming signing of Alcides Escobar?
For the price, it isn't nearly as bad as what people are making it out to be. I guess the issue that I understand is that the Royals are speaking out of both sides of their mouth. They're saying that they want to go young. They're saying that they want to compete, and their actions are actually showing both of those things. Because what do you do with Mondesi? Are you trying to steal another year before he's arbitration eligible? So I guess I get what the Royals are thinking. It just doesn't make sense with what the plan was, at least in my understanding, going forward.
Well, now that also leads us to speculate about Raul Mondesi. Mm-hmm. Would he perhaps play second base and they trade Whit Merrifield? Yep. Would he perhaps take a shot at center field, which I know they experimented with at spring training last year? He's super athletic. He's got to play up the middle somewhere. Shortstop, second base. I can't vouch for his center field skills, but the Royals are giving themselves options. And if they think Alcides isn't the guy a month or two in, put him on the bench. It's $2.5 million. That's jump change.
It is.
Baseball.
It does remind me a little bit, though, of them trying to force all the moving parts where they were going to have Butler play at first, right. And Gordon was moving to the outfield because Moustakas was coming along. It's Royals baseball.
Question mark for this season. All right, we'll take a time out here for the top of the hour. Former Royals pitcher Alfitz Morris is going to join us next, talk about all these Royals moves and FanFest. You're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City.